Please tell me the reason and the colors that you fly. Love just one nation, Lord, and the whole world be divine. You say you're sorry, Lord, there is no other choice. But God bless the people and no, cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies. Yes, we can bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Oh, we may even find a solution to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it. Violence brings one thing, more and more of the same. Military madness, the smell of flesh and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses, scream out if you're still sane. To all of us gone crazy, Lord, one refrain. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Oh, we may even find a solution to hunger and disease. Chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Well, we may even find the solution to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world into pieces, but we can't bomb it into.
Thank you for listening to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Coming up first, the effects of climate change on New York City. This report examines storm surges and other potential effects of climate change on New York City. Klaus Jacob, senior research scientist at Columbia University and Earth Observatory, talks to host Steve Curwood from his flooded home on the Hudson River. And then after that, John Whitehead on civil liberties, constitutional attorney and author John Whitehead discusses the U.S. government's authorization of drone aircraft for domestic law enforcement and surveillance. He also talks about Rutherford Institute's model legislation for preserving civil liberties and slowing the drone invasion. And after that, Jeff Fogg, renowned economist and founding president of the Economic Policy Institute, explains why the major political parties have no plan to remedy America's unemployment, inequality, or long economic slide.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. Sandy the Superstorm has dominated the news, but there is an election on, and the disaster helped engineer some unusual political fallout. New Jersey's Republican Governor Chris Christie, he preys on President Obama for his speedy responsiveness to the catastrophe. And Michael Bloomberg made a last-minute endorsement of Obama for re-election. The independent New York mayor cited climate change as he praised the Democratic president's actions to cut emissions and lamented Republican Mitt Romney's opposition to capping global warming gases. One sees climate change as an urgent problem that threatens our planet. One does not, Bloomberg wrote in an opinion piece. I want our president to place scientific evidence and risk management above electoral politics. Risk management was a key part of a documentary, Degrees of Concern, Climate Change and New York City's Future, that we broadcast back in 2003. It examined the vulnerability of the Big Apple to flooding from a major ocean storm such as Sandy. We visited Ground Zero, where the twin towers of the World Trade Center once stood, with Klaus Jacob, a senior research scientist at Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, who described how Lower Manhattan could be inundated in a storm surge. Here's part of that story from reporter John Rudolph.
Professor Klaus Jacob looks out over the World Trade Center site and sees a potential disaster in the making. It's not the threat of more terrorism. Jacob worries that in coming decades, whatever is built on the site will be vulnerable to the combination of rising seas and more intense storms aggravated by climate change.
The frequency of such flooding events could increase on an average 3 times, but in the worst case as much as 10 times. So what is right now a 50-year storm, which is roughly an 8-foot coastal storm surge here at this place where we stand, it could happen instead of every 50 years, it could happen every 5 years. And that's not good for a city that claims to be the world financial capital to see its financial infrastructure flooded every 5 years and business interrupted and all the things that go with it.
Now, as you said, there's a range of possibilities. There's the best case scenario, there's the worst case scenario. Does it really matter in terms of which of these scenarios you choose in terms of the increased vulnerability of Ground Zero, of the subway entrances downtown, of the tunnel entrances downtown, and so forth?
We have already a storm surge problem. The Holland Tunnel is always on the verge of flooding during nor'easters, and the past tunnel already has flooded. So we know what the current risk is. What's so bad is that it will become more frequent. And so it's actually more cost beneficial to do it now. Because the longer we wait, the less benefit we get, because we may incur some losses before we do the measures. So why not do them now when we are all building this infrastructure anyhow?
What kinds of specific measures are you suggesting should be taken now to protect this infrastructure from the kinds of storm surges that you've been talking about?
Well, one good thing is that we already have created again some buffer zones on the waterfront towards the Hudson. Much of what was formerly industrial or harbor facilities have been turned into parkland. So that's great. That's a good measure. That's a step in the right direction. What has to be done for protecting both the infrastructure but also buildings that are going up here is we simply have to be aware that all critical entrances have to be at a certain level that exceeds the projected flooding levels. And we can discuss the details how to achieve it, and engineers will do probably a very good job in doing this. But it has to be brought in into the planning.
When you look at the situation out in Jamaica Bay and then you stand here in front of Ground Zero, what's the connection between the disappearing marshes in Jamaica Bay and the threat that Ground Zero and the Holland and Midtown tunnels face?
Well, I wish we would lose a piece of Manhattan just like we do out in Jamaica Bay every year, and then we would see it better. So far, we have engineered over it cosmetically, but we really haven't addressed the fundamental issues.
Professor Klaus Jacob of Columbia University with reporter John Rudolph at Ground Zero in 2003. Well, Professor Jacob would presumably be justified in looking at the extraordinary destruction of Superstorm Sandy and saying, "I told you so." So we called him up and reached him on his cell phone. Hello?
Klaus Jacob.
Hi, Klaus Jacob. Steve Curwood here at Living on Earth. How are you, sir?
Fine.
You're on your cell phone because you've lost power?
That's right. I am a victim like many, many others here in the New York area.
How have you and your family fared in this storm?
Well, we got hit. We had 2 feet of water in the house and 2 cars flooded out. And no power, no gas, no electricity, no communication except the cell phone.
And what neighborhood are you in?
We are in a small village called Piermont, New York, which is on the Hudson, about 5 miles south of the Tappan Zee Bridge.
And what's the damage like in your neighborhood?
A lot of boats got washed into the backyards of people. There's a marina. Many of the waterfront gardens were heavily damaged from the wave action. And the worst, I would say about a third of the village was inundated with 2 feet or more of water, some up to 5 feet.
Now, back in 2003, you said that Manhattan would need to get hit by serious flooding before officials would start to think more seriously about the risks of climate change, particularly the storm surges. So you think Sandy's enough of a wake-up call?
Well, last year's Irene should have been the wake-up call, and then we should have gotten into action. So this is the second wake-up call. How many wake-up calls do we need?
Are you surprised by any of what you've seen about this? I mean, you saw this coming, but did you think it would be this bad for the city?
Well, I mean, we had a scenario in which we went through the exercise what a 100-year storm would do. And Sandy turned out to be pretty much that scenario that we investigated, and all the consequences seem to have come through.
We're looking at the new reality here, Klaus Jacob.
Well, yes, I have heard Governor Cuomo say that there's a new reality, but that reality has been around for about 10 years. What has changed is that we have incurred the losses.
Now, back in 2003, you were encouraged about the development of buffer zones along the waterfront. What else should New York City do now to better prepare itself for these new realities?
Well, first, it needs to protect its infrastructure, the subways, the sewer water treatment plants, and the electric power plants and communication and many other things. Secondly, each owner near or on the waterfront or in a flood zone has to take some responsibility for his or her own safety, and investment and businesses need to think about business continuity. So you can't just leave it to the city or the state or the federal government. Everybody has their task.
If you had the ear of the mayor of New York right now, what would you say?
I would say, enough with talk. Let's get to action. First of all, of course, you have to have good engineering plans, which we haven't done yet. We have sort of general ideas how we might go about. But, for instance, there are engineers within the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, that have been thinking about how to approach this issue, but they haven't been allowed by the management and, if you like, by the legislature and the governor, because no money is available for really action, and that's what we need. So the engineerings are in the starting holes, but there is no gun for the race to begin.
Now, some will say this is a fluke, you know. There's a big flood back in 1821. It'll be 100, 200 years before this happens again.
Well, it's amazing that in the political bodies we are still talking whether that is a new reality. When you come from a science or technical point, or even from a common experience, sea level rise.
We're losing you. I think I'll need to say goodbye, let you save your battery here. Klaus Jacob, thank you so much for taking this time with us today.
You're welcome. Bye.
Klaus Jacob is a senior research scientist at Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Today, there is a growing number of men and women hunters with a problem. The problem is, they carry guns.
Oh my God, I shot off my big toe!
No, you didn't. You shot off mine.
Oh, sorry.
NRAA is here to help with our 12-step program.
The fact is, Merle, you just can't carry a gun anymore.
But I wanted to go hunting tomorrow.
Okay, let's say you go hunting tomorrow, you forget your gun is loaded, and you shoot yourself in the foot again. How is that going to feel?
Well, it'll hurt.
Step one is admitting that you have a problem.
Hi, my name is Merle, and I haven't shot myself in over a week.
Hi, Merle.
NRAA. Keep coming back. It works.
Ow! I shot my toe.
Sometimes.
Coming up next, John Whitehead on civil liberties. Constitutional attorney and author John Whitehead discusses the U.S. government's authorization of drone aircraft for domestic law enforcement and surveillance. He also talks about the Rutherford Institute's model legislation for preserving civil liberties and slowing the drone invasion.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and this is my show. Our next guest is John Whitehead. He's an attorney and author with the Rutherford Institute. You might remember we talked with him about the government's kidnapping of that veteran for posting lyrics on his Facebook page a few weeks back. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, thank you. I'm doing fine.
By the way, whatever happened with that?
What happened was we got him out in about a week. He was in there. A judge finally released him, saying there was no grounds to keep Brandon Robb. And now we're preparing a federal civil rights lawsuit against the agencies involved.
Good times. All right.
Well, so he's ready to go, and we've got a cadre of lawyers, and we kind of want to send the signal. What we found out after we got involved in that case, a lot of veterans were coming to us saying they had been contacted by the FBI or the Department of Homeland Security for posting things on their website or their Facebook page, which is kind of dangerous since we have the First Amendment in America, which says you have the right to free speech. And so we'd like to slow the agencies down and get them to stop harassing veterans.
They are just scared to death of their own Praetorians, right?
They are.
Give them a rifle, teach them to kill, and then,
There's been a number of, you know, again, starting in 2009, basically, I first saw it, is that veterans were dangerous, they had to be contained, but, again, we have a constitution in America, and that's what we want to protect.
Yeah. All right, so now I want to talk with you about the drones. And you guys, I believe, are leading this, spearheading this movement to submit model legislation to the 50 state governments to get the state governments to ban, to some degree, I don't know, I'll let you explain, the use of drones by civilian police agencies against us.
Yes. Actually, we've floated one to the Senate Judiciary Committee, model legislation, and then we sent it to all 50 states, to their state legislatures. It's called the Freedom from Drone Surveillance Act. But just a little background, the problem with drones, and President Obama signed the law into effect not too long ago, which by 2015, which will allow drones to be flying over the country. The estimates by the FAA right now is about 30,000 drones will be crossing America by 2020. That's a lot of drones. If you go to our website, Rutherford.org, it would be good to go and read the articles I've written on drones so you can get educated on it. I'm talking to your listeners here, because if you need to understand what drones are, they're a new form of technology, but they're aerial unmanned vehicles that are usually remote controlled by some troops or, believe it or not, college students on the ground, and they've been used in Afghanistan and Iraq as war weapons, where a number of casualties have appeared. But what the drone is equipped with will be anti-personnel devices such as tasers, rubber bullets, lasers, things to repel basically protesters. They will have facial recognition software. This is all footnoted stuff, so I'm not making anything up here. Probably scanning devices that looks like they'll be able to see through walls. So if you're in your home, they'll be able to see you moving about in your home. Again, they'll have
and
all
by
these
the way,
devices.
Pardon me for interrupting, John, but I just wanted to say that that's not magic or anything. It's just sophisticated radar and computers interpreting numbers that they're getting or whatever. That's not. It may sound fanciful. Oh yeah, see through walls, but it's not Superman X-ray vision or something like that.
No, they'll be able to see
waves.
Images. Yeah, or they'll be able to see what you know. I think it'll get to be quite sophisticated eventually. They'll be able to see pretty clearly what you're doing in your home. So what we did is we came up, and I actually talked to a few drone experts, the guys that actually own drones. I had a fellow this summer that actually came in and visited me for quite a while. He had drones in his car, two small ones, and he showed me how they operated and those kind of things. But that's one of the problems is there's going to be a lot of private individuals and corporations with drones. They'll also be recording what they see in the sky, what you're doing on the street. They'll have infrared technology. That's already been announced. They'll be able to see people walking at night. So they'll have a lot of capabilities. So what we did is we came up with a law basically saying that any information collected by a drone cannot be used against American citizens in a court of law. That would include private drones. What you will have is the police will actually be downloading what people have recorded on their own private drones. And again, like I say, if you go to our website and read some of the stuff that I've written on, they have a drone now, supposedly, the government, that is as small as a mosquito. They have a hummingbird drone. You can actually go on YouTube, and I would do this, go on YouTube and watch this hummingbird drone. It's going to get so sophisticated that if you go out in your yard and there's a hummingbird there, you won't know the difference between the hummingbird and the drone. They also have seagull drones. So these things will be very sophisticated. They're going to be able to watch everything you're doing. So the question is, should they be used against the American public? And we're saying no. And then we're saying unless there's a national emergency declared by the President of the United States, they can't have anti-personnel weapons on them. In other words, dispersing crowds.
Let me just play devil's advocate here for a second, right? Because every county sheriff in America, and that's what, 18,000 of them or something, they're going to have reasons they need these things. Right. And you and I could just sit here for like 5 minutes and think of 100 excuses that they're going to come up with.
Oh, sure.
For all of these things, including using shotguns. I mean, come on. Officer safety is the single highest principle in American society. If you could get, life in prison for killing a cop's dog.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're better than soldiers. They're better than demigods. Their lives have 10,000 times the value of a regular mundane, as Will Griggs says. So how in the world could you expect that the state legislatures are ever going to allow a cop to put his life in danger again when he could simply fly his remote control plane over there and kill whoever it is he wants to kill?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think there are a couple of state legislatures that have contacted us. They're interested in passing these, but these, I would say, they're the exception to the rule. To get any kind of anti-drone legislation passed, it's going to take massive lobbying, citizens, protests. So I don't think you're going to see much of it now.
Would you please come to Chicago just to sing? In a land that's known as freedom, how can such a thing be fair? Won't you please come to Chicago for the help that we can bring? We can change the world. We are ready. Won't you please come to Chicago for a
And now for something completely different.